Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 91 in this series entitled The Power of a Mitzvah Part 1. Do spiritual people need mitzvos? This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York on the 16th of Adar 1, 5760.
Lamed Hey, the 35th chapter of Tanya, is dedicated to answering the awesome question of the Alter Rebbe concerning Tachlis Briyas HaBeinonim. What is the purpose of the creation of the Beinonim who apparently and in truth toil their entire life towards a goal and an end that they never ultimately achieve? The Beinoni, as discussed, the ordinary man operates on two tracks, on dual tracks, the transcendental track and the egotistical track, and they both function in a conscious way, constantly in his psyche and character. And even after years and years of victory, of subduing his animal track, even after all of that, that track or that soul, the animal within the Beinoni, never changes its stripes, never changes its color. What is ultimately the purpose, posed Alter Rebbe the question, of fighting your entire life with those animalistic inclinations, v'loy yachluloy, and never coming out victorious? There was once a man who came to the holy Rabbinim of Pshischa, the Rebbe Rabbinim, with the following complaint. I have seen in the holy books, he said, that if you fast a certain amount of fasts, you merit that Prophet Elijah Eliyahu Anavi reveals himself to you and reveals to you the deepest mystical secrets of the Torah. Says the man to Rabbinim, I have fasted all of the fasts exactly as prescribed in the holy books. I mortified myself to a very significant degree. And nonetheless, Le Naga, Le Pug, Elijah the prophet has not revealed himself to me. So Rabbinim responded, he said, let me tell you a story. Once the Baal Shem Tov had to travel to a far destination to fulfill a mission that was extremely crucially important for the Jewish community in that location. As was his custom, he summoned his coachman, whose name was Alexei, with several of his students. They went onto the wagon, and he told Alexei to begin the journey. As was the Baal Shem Tov's custom in many of these journeys, he would tell Alexei, the coachman, to drop the reins, turn around on the bench, and let the horses go on their own. And this happened also during this journey. He told Alexei, okay, enough, drop the reins, turn around facing us. And as soon as he turned around the wagoneer, suddenly it seemed as the roads were flying under the legs, under the feet of the horses. And they journeyed a journey that would usually take a few weeks and mamash several hours. The horses began seeing that the normal feeding stations where Alexei would usually stop in order to feed them oats and water were speeding under their feet. They weren't stopping there. So one horse turns to his friend and in horse language and vocabulary says, you know, it seems to me that we have ceased to be horses. We've become human beings. Vaharaya, the proof of it is, the normal locations, the customary places where our wagoneer usually takes a break in order to feed us, he's just passing by. Must we conclude that we will eat together with the human beings when we arrive at the crossroad inns where the human beings eat? Since we have become human beings, that's when we will partake in our food in human food. Sure enough, a little while later, they pass one crossroad inn and another kretchm and another inn and so forth. So what, the same horse turns to his friend, he says, you know, it seems that we have already been elevated to the next level. We have become angels. We not only are we not horses, we're not even human beings. And therefore, there's no need anymore to partake in any earthly food, not animal food, and not even human food. And the horses became extremely ecstatic and excited that this day, after so many years, they have experienced such a powerful metamorphosis from horse to human being, and then even greater from human being to angel. And then the Baal Shem Tov finally reached his destination. He and his students ran off to fulfill the important, crucial mission for which they came. And Alexei took the horses to the barn, and he fed them the same oats, and they guzzled down the water and devoured the animal food. And the horse turns to his friend and it says, upon them that were still horses. Nothing changed. So Rabbinim turns to the man and he says, the purpose of fasting, all these fasts, is that the human being should become elevated from a horse level to a human level. That is the purpose, to introduce a deeper level of spirituality where coarse materialism doesn't play such a role in his life. But if the moment he completes the fast, he runs to the food with a full-fledged declared war against the food and devours it in a few seconds with the same fervor as before. So he remained the same horse. And the prophet Elijah generally doesn't reveal himself to horses.
But somehow dogs know when he's in town.
Okay, that's true. It's a separate issue. And in that sense, the Alter Rebbe discusses the tragic phenomenon that characterizes the life of the Beinoni, which in this sense is the model of each and every single one of us. His soul is sent out into a battle that it can never win. It can never triumph. Not that he doesn't triumph because he didn't work hard enough, because he did not fulfill his mission, his purpose, because of his laziness or arrogance or depression or another obstacle. No, because he essentially is incapable of victory. Because as we know, one of the major contributions of the Alter Rebbe in the Tanya is that the Beinoni travels on a path of his own that is divergent, that is distinct to the path of a tzaddik. The Beinoni is not traveling the same path and has not reached yet his destination. The path of the Beinoni is an independent path, and the life of the Beinoni constitutes an end in and of itself. That was one of the major contributions of the Alter Rebbe in describing and illuminating the profile of the Beinoni. So what is the purpose that there should be no purpose? And as we mentioned last week, the primary question is not what can be the purpose in struggle. Perhaps there is a purpose in the Beinoni subduing negativity and so forth. But if that was the whole purpose, that he should fight and combat evil throughout his whole life, even though it's part of his life, there was no need for such an intimate connection in his life between the divine soul and animal soul. If at the end of the day, the personality and the stripes of the animal soul do not change, they didn't have to be so intertwined with each other to the extent that you can't tell them apart in the Beinoni's life. You can't tell apart the divine track from the animal track. They're intertwined, they're intermingled, they're interconnected with each other. Just for the sake of a battle, they could have remained two units, and there's no justified reason for their total intimate union with each other. When at the end of the day, the divine soul remains divine and the animal soul remains animal in the Beinoni's life. Which would seem to indicate that no, the divine soul does have an impact on the animal soul, and for that reason they have to get married to each other. They marry each other. But apparently nothing is accomplished, they just fight. Now imagine you marry a man and a woman. Now niach, let's say one of the parties can be victorious in every debate. That's a relationship. If you know that for their whole life there will be nothing they will agree upon, they will constantly debate. Even if you know that one party will always be victorious in the debate and things will run his way or her way. It seems ridiculous to create such a type of marriage, and that's what happens in the life of the Beinoni. The two souls marry each other, so the Beinoni finds the techniques to be victorious in every debate and make sure that despite the fact that his wife or the husband says this, we will live this way. And at the end of his life, that's how the Shalom Bayis looks, that situation. What can be the purpose of this? To comfort, to console the Beinoni who experiences this issue and this dilemma every day and every moment of his life. L'nachamam b'kiflayim l'tishia, as he put it. To comfort him in a double measure of with a double measure of comfort. He introduced the unique insight of the lad, the Yenuka in Zohar Parshas Balak, the child of Reb Hamnuna Sava, Reb Hamnuna the Elder, who said that the body of a human being is a wick. And on the body, on the head of the human being, burns a flame. The flame of the Shekhinah, the divine presence, which is kindled upon the head of the human being. And in order that the flame should be contained on the wick, it must have oil. And the oil, that is uvda and tavan, the good deeds, through which the Yenuka, the lad, explained the pasuk in Kehelas Perek Beis, Hachacham Einav Bereshah. The wise man's eyes are in his head, that the primary focus and concern, eyes in context of focus, of the wise man is that the flame burning above his head should continuously burn, which means it should continuously have oil, so that the body can always serve as a wick for the flame. What is the oil? The oil are his mitzvahs and his good deeds. And now the Alter Rebbe continues. After prefacing and quoting the Zohar in an elaborate fashion, he quotes almost the whole piece, the Alter Rebbe now continues with the explanation. We are on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, closer to the bottom of the page, page 87, V'hine Bir Mashal Zeh, after the period. Eight lines from the bottom. You see it? V'hine, now, Bir Mashal Zeh, the meaning of this analogy, of this metaphor in Zayar. Shehim Shalei Rashchin Alei Haneh, in which the child in Zohar compared the light of the Shekhinah, the light of the divine presence, to the light of a candle. She'ein e'meir v'neches b'psila b'li shemen, which does not shed light, nor is retained by the wick without oil. So the meaning behind this analogy, that the Shekhinah is considered a flame, the body is considered a wick, And if light cannot be contained, can be retained by a wick without oil, v'kach, and similarly in the nimshal. Ein ha-shchinah sheir al gufa adam shenimshal upsila. The Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, does not rest upon the man's body, which is compared to a wick. El al yidei ma'isim tovim dafka, only through good deeds. Zagad al tereb. V'leidai loy benishma soy shehi chelek aleika mimal mamash. And his soul, although she is part of Hashem above, is insufficient. Liyos hi k'shem lipsila, so that she should serve as oil for the wick. So the Alter Rebbe here is asking a question. Why doesn't the soul of the Jew suffice to serve as oil for the wick, so that the flame of the Divine Presence should be able to be retained on the body? On the contrary, it would seem that the soul is more appropriate to serve as oil than good deeds. Because as the Alter Rebbe prefaced, the primary idea is that in order that light should exist, it shouldn't depart, it shouldn't soar, it needs to be held down, it needs to be restrained, either through a wick, a log, a piece of wood, and so forth. But if you only have a wick, if you only have a wick, if you kindle a wick with fire, without any oil, A, it's consumed rapidly, it burns out, as you said, and the fire vanishes very quickly. Versus when you have oil, it allows the fire to be kindled and to burn steadily for a long time based on the quantity of the oil. That's A. B, as discussed in various places, it's seen practically, the light that you have when you put a wick on fire, when you burn a wick, is somewhat dim and smoky. It's never as clear, as luminescent, as refined as the light when oil is burning. And the reason for that is that a wick consists of material which is not so refined, it's insufficiently refined to be completely absorbed by the flame. Oil is much more subtle, it's much more refined, it yields freely and silently to the flame, it's totally transformed in the flame, it produces a very clear and a very pure light that burns steadily. And for this reason, there is also a third difference. When you burn the wick, something will be left over. A little bit of ashes, but something. Some ashes will remain there after the fire goes out, is extinguished. When oil is burnt and consumed by the fire, nothing remains. So we understand that the body cannot serve as oil, which becomes absorbed in the light of the Divine Presence, because the body is physical, it's mundane, it's coarse, it's egotistical. But apparently, the most appropriate element of the human life that can be absorbed as oil in the Divine Presence is the soul. Why is it, Zagda Alter Rebbe, that for the Shekhinah to dwell on me, must I have ma'isim tovim, good deeds? Why can't my soul, my holy and pure soul, secure the connection between man and God? Why does a spiritual person, in other words, need really ma'isim tovim to have the Shekhinah on him? Why is it my spirituality in me, including my love to Hashem, my awe to Hashem, why can that not secure a relationship with godliness? On the contrary, that is spiritual. It's more oil than ma'isim tovim. It's more befitting to become absorbed in divine energy. Spirituality is spiritual. Ma'isim tovim are physical. They're also coarse. They're not the body, but they're nevertheless dealing with physicality. It would seem that the soul is much more appropriate to be oil. And again, similar in a human relationship, what would you say is the oil that fuels a relationship, that fuels the fire? It's usually the feeling, the passion, the spirituality, the romance. That is the fire. That is what makes the fire to burn. That's what causes the fire to burn. Obviously, deeds are important. Actions are crucial. But that's not what creates the fire, the bren, the flame. Nevertheless, comes the eunuch in the Zayir and says, no. What is the oil that ensures the continuous flame of the Shekhinah on your hand? It's the good deeds. If the Zayir would say that you have to reveal your soul, the soul is dormant, latent. So your spirituality can be there, but it's not an issue in your life. So maybe the good deeds help you to reveal the soul. Nope, that we can understand. But it seems from the Zayir, the Alter Rebbe is saying that that's not the intention. Even a tzaddik, for example, whose soul is absolutely revealed. Not like the Beinoni, who again operates on two tracks and so forth. And days and weeks can pass without the Beinoni feeling his soul. Even the tzaddik whose soul is revealed, the spirituality is revealed, needs oil. Shemen arish chalei echser. And what is the oil? The good deeds. So the Alter Rebbe says, the explanation in this metaphor, that the Maisim Tovim are the Shemen, Mevuru Muvun L'chol Maskel, is clear and understandable to every wise person. And now we have to open our minds and our hearts to hear this explanation that's readily understood to every wise person. The explanation of the Alter Rebbe here is carefully constructed with many details and nuances, and you have to toil to understand it well. It's a profound explanation. Zog the Alter Rebbe, yeah? Yes. The body, and obviously the biological vitality that animates the body, is considered the wick, which retains the flame. The Shekhinah exists on the human head. That's why we wear yarmulke, the Zayir says. That's the wick that contains the flame. But you need oil, and the oil is of Don Tavon, good deeds, mitzvahs. Zog the Alter Rebbe, the explanation is, Kihine nishmas ha'adam. For the soul of man, afilu tzaddik gamur, even if he, the man, be a perfect tzaddik. Oyvid Hashem b'yirev ave b'tanugim, who serves Hashem with awe and love, and not just plain love. Ava b'tanugim, which means love of delights, which is the most profound level of love, where the tzaddik is totally consumed with a powerful passion and geschmack, delight and affection, where he basks and bathes with the deepest delight in godliness. So the soul of man, even if he is on this level, afal pikein, nevertheless, ein apteila b'metzius legamri. She, the soul, does not totally surrender her sense of self, her sense of selfhood, libatel v'likolul ba'ed Hashem mamish, so that she can become absolutely absorbed and nullified within Hashem's energy mamish, so that she become one with Hashem's energy and that she can merge with it in an absolute, complete unity. This does not occur in the consciousness of the soul. Rather, who dover b'fnei yatzma, he, even the tzaddik, remains a separate entity, yarei Hashem v'oyhavei, an entity which fears Hashem and loves Hashem. Masha einkin ha-mitzvahs ha-maisim tevim, not so with mitzvahs and good deeds, shehein ritzein yisbarach, which constitute, which are Hashem's will. Love and awe, even on the deepest level, is a property of the soul. Mitzvahs are the property of Hashem. So love and awe and the spirituality of the soul cannot become oil. Only the mitzvahs you bring into your life, they can serve as oil for the divine energy to be present in your life and in your psyche. In other words, the very fact that you say that someone loves another human being, for example, the very fact that we talk about me loving you and so forth implies that I am significant, that the I is significant. Because in order for the love to have any significance, my emotions have to be significant. And for my emotions to be significant, my I has to be significant. I have to have an identity. Because it is my emotions that are loving you. It is me that is loving you. If I am worthless and insignificant and I am nothing, I surrender the whole self, the whole sense of self. So my emotions are nothing and insignificant, and obviously my love is naught. So the very definition of the concept of love implies that there is an I. Even though that I is gravitating to you and is love with you and is consumed by you, but the very fact that we highlight and we discuss the fact that you are in love, so even though we're discussing that you are in love with this person and so forth, it means there is a you. If not, the whole term love is worthless, is insignificant, there's no need to mention it. What about if I don't love you? I don't feel that emotion at the moment. But there's something else. You have a certain desire. And I go ahead and fulfill that desire. I go and do it. Here, in this relationship, the I doesn't play a role. This element is associated exclusively with the beloved one. In order for the deed to be significant, to be helpful, I could be insignificant and worthless. My emotions can be totally valueless. My identity could be valueless. In fact, another person can do the same thing and it would be as helpful. Your will be implemented. Both are relationships with the beloved. But in the relationship that exists in the love experience, the lover plays a role. His I is significant, maybe as significant as the I who he loves. Or at least somewhat significant, because if it's not significant, there's no love happening. Implementing the will of the beloved one is not about me. The I plays no role. I might be doing it, but it is really no issue who I am, and even if I am, the issue is that what you want is being done. And that's why, in fact, Chassidus discusses the fact that doing loving things for someone you love is sometimes much deeper and more important than loving. If we want to insist on yeshivish language, you could say, in the feeling of love, in both cases, let's rephrase it, in both cases is a relationship between two entities, between the lover and the beloved one. But in the feeling of love, the ne'ahav, the beloved one, is a din in the lover. Love is a description of my identity, of my state, of my consciousness. It happens to be that you are the one that occupy my space. It's an uptight in the ayhev. It's a gedder, it's a din in the lover, so to speak. It's describing my identity. When I do something for you, for someone I love, the lover is now a detail, a component of the beloved one. It's a din in the beloved one. The I really plays no role here. Zagdal Terebbe, love, even a tzaddik gomer, who serves Hashem with the deepest level of love that he experiences in his soul. The soul is a chelik alikami mal. It's a spark of Hashem. It feels its source. It gravitates to its source. It needs meaning. It needs godliness. It needs transcendence. That's what a soul is. And a tzaddik is totally open to that level. The ego is transparent and that soul is there. But that cannot become oil, because oil must be totally absorbed in the flame, must be totally transformed into the flame. And that's how the fire is retained on the wick. The Nesol Zagdal Terebbe doesn't totally surrender her sense of self. There is an identity that loves Hashem, that is captivated by Hashem, that experiences awe from Hashem. So Zagdal Terebbe is not bottled by Metzius Legamri. True, it's not egotistical, it's not self-centered, its identity is characterized, the description of the eye of the soul is not like the eye of the ego. It's an eye that's in love with truth, that's in love with godliness, but it's a description of the eye of the soul. And since it does not surrender totally the self, it retains some level of identity. So it does not become totally absorbed and included in the energy of Hashem to merge in perfect union. Mitzvahs, ma'isim tovim, are not a property of the soul. They're Hashem's. They're a property of Hashem. He wants it. It's His thing. It's His domain. It's not your experience. So they, when you introduce mitzvahs into your life, when you engage in a mitzvah, they serve as oil that's totally absorbed in the divine energy. Torah mitzvahs are objects, so to speak, are elements, are properties that are Hashem's thing. It's not on my thing that I love Hashem. It's about Him. So in mitzvahs there is no I, there's no identity, and therefore, since the I doesn't exist there, it's totally absorbed in divine energy. Good question. A very good question. You're saying the Alter Rebbe says in Perik Yud, he brings also the Zayar, the Kibradish, Tadal Basar Avoy Ve'imai, that the Tzaddik reaches a level of a son who's totally yearns to help the father and the mother. And you mentioned very well what the Alter Rebbe says in Perik Yud, that the Neshama is a flame, and what's the definition of a flame? Neir Hashem Nishmas Adam. What's the definition of a flame? That it's never content in the wick, it's always soaring upwards. But that's precisely the point. Where is the flame soaring to? What does he say? The flame is soaring to be absorbed in the source of the flame, as he puts it there, Tachas Galgal Hayareach, whatever the model is there, that the flame on every single wick is soaring to depart from the wick and to be absorbed in the source. The definition of a soul is that it's not content with the status quo of being. It seeks to be not. It seeks to be absorbed in the source. It's really in love, but it's in love. Here we're describing the supernal flame, not the individualistic flame of the individual soul that's seeking to connect to its source. We're talking now about the cosmic, transcendental, intimate, essential flame of the Shekhinah itself. Ava b'tanugim is a powerful relationship, but the relationship applies not total surrender of identity. So if there's not total surrender of identity, the shemen is not real shemen. It still retains itself. It can't be totally absorbed. There's still some level of I. Mitzvahs are his property. But this does not exhaust the issue by no means. This is just the introduction to the introduction. We're not talking...
An individual here, because of each person being there.
If you'll ask the question, you ask. In Perikitas, he says, the neshama is a flame. So I'm saying we have to understand what he's talking about. Here he's talking about the flame of the Shekhinah. On every neshama is defined as an individual flame soaring to be absorbed in the cosmic flame of Hashem. Now the Zohar is, that's Perikites. Now the Zohar is talking about the cosmic divine flame that dwells on the head of a Yid that needs oil. And that oil is not the neshama, is ma'isim tovim. Now, you may ask, the whole creation is Hashem's will. Every nuance, component, and element of creation exists because of Hashem's will. It's all His will. It's all His properties in a way. So the Alter Rebbe explains